Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, continuing with Bill Rajo, Senior Fellow, Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He keeps the Long Word Journal. He's my colleague and co-host as we welcome Seth Frantzman of the Jerusalem Post and the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, most importantly, the author of the new FDD publication, October 7 War, ongoing. Seth tells the story of the origins, that horrible day, a year past, and then the preparation and execution of the IDF's battle plan in Gaza. We now have a war that also extends into the north, at least along the border with Lebanon, and then we're pending the next and next and next phase of the war with the Houthis, the war with Tehran directly. Certainly the concerns about a wider war are secondary at this moment. Israel's fighting on at least seven fronts. Seth, I begin with the open question raised by the Chief of Staff, Mr. General Halevi, and his counselors, about the fate of Sinwar, the boss of Hamas, the man who launched the attack on October 7th. That question was raised purposefully, I read, because during a meeting that was available to the media, there was a photograph of all of the leadership of Hamas with those who've been KIA and those who are unknown. And the picture of Sinwar had a question mark on it. Since then, we've had a video released by the IDF of Sinwar in February of this year, I believe, moving through a tunnel somewhere, we can guess, under Khan Yunis with his family. He was wearing floppies and carrying some documents, looking like a man at home with his family, except that he was in a darkened tunnel underneath the Israeli offensive against Hamas. What do we know about him? What do we need to know about him? Is it concerning for everyone, or is this just a footnote on the Hamas war? Good day to you, Seth.
Good day to you. Yahya Sinwar is obviously the mastermind behind October 7th and was able to bring together these forces. So, you know, he's very important, certainly in Gaza. I think he runs, you know, he also runs Hamas these days. I think his brother and other people that are quite close to him that are from Khan Yunis all grew up together. So, you know, he has an iron grip around this organization, and he certainly also enjoys support abroad by the Hamas members that reside mostly in Qatar. So, he's a key to this. In the past, Hamas has lost leaders and it has always revived itself. In fact, it's gotten stronger often when it loses people. So it's plausible that he could be eliminated and Hamas could survive. But I think that, you know, the question about whether he hasn't been in communication with anyone recently, you know, and if he is alive, it means he's using couriers or something. And that's not so surprising. You know, Osama bin Laden lived a long time in Pakistan, hiding out in a villa and using couriers. So, you know, it's plausible he's alive. It's we just don't know. I think the IDF, you know, that may have been that picture we saw where there was a question mark in the background of this briefing. You know, that may have been a real question mark, or it may have been, you know, a bit of information warfare as well, designed to make it seem that, you know, maybe Hamas is leaderless. If Hamas is leaderless in Gaza, then it would stand to reason that it could be more easily defeated And the IDF's operations in Gaza this week show that Hamas is trying to revive itself as opposed to falling apart.
Bill, you have a question for Seth.
Yes, Seth, just how bad has Hamas's leadership been hurt by Israeli operations, not just within Israel, but outside of Israel? You had Ismail Haniyeh killed in Tehran. Is there someone, if Sinwar is taken out, is there someone of his stature that could replace him?
I mean, it would appear that there isn't someone that could replace him. But again, if we went back to 2002 or 2003 and we said, well, Sheikh Yassin has just been killed and Rantisi and other Hamas leaders at the time, would we necessarily have settled on Sinwar as the guy who will not only replace them, but actually turn the exponentially make the organization stronger? So I think it's always, you just never know in this context what might come next. I mean, it's worth recalling that Hassan Nasrallah, when he was appointed the head of Hezbollah back in the 90s, he was a young person that didn't necessarily seem like someone that maybe would turn that organization into what it was. So I think it's unclear. It would appear that Hamas has lost so many brigade commanders and company commanders, according to the IDF. I mean, the losses seem to basically mean almost everyone in their kind of middle and senior ranks, in terms of the commanders that are the militant ones, have been eliminated. So you have to ask yourself then, well, who's controlling all these guys on the ground today?
We turn to what we know about the IDF operations in Gaza. Your report of last week about re-entering Jabalia, which I believe is in the north of Gaza, although everything's close together. Direction doesn't really have a weight when you're talking about this tight a space. And you've told before, Seth, and also it's in your book, that Hamas finds it easy to reconstitute itself. It goes into the tunnels, changes its shirt, pops out again. Is that what's going on, or are these new recruits?
So the area of Jabalia or Jabalia is in, it's in northern Gaza. It's to the kind of east, southeast of Gaza City. It's an important neighborhood. There's a refugee camp there. It's kind of a bit hilly country. It's very close to the border with Israel. It played a role, obviously, in the attack. The people there attacked Israel on the morning of October 7th, a year ago. So Hamas is not only strong there, but they've managed to return to this area several times. The IDF cleared it in the early months of the war. Then the IDF had to go back in and clear it again in a several-week campaign, and now the IDF is going back. Now, what the Gaza campaign has usually taught us is that each time the IDF goes back, it's a slightly shorter amount of time it takes to eliminate what the Hamas guys that are there. And the story behind that is that when Hamas returns and recruits, the caliber of people it brings back and the level of weapons they have is less. And the amount of terrorist infrastructure they can hide in, like tunnels, is reduced bit by bit each time. It's like using sandpaper on a piece of wood. That's been the model. But again, it does show that Hamas is able to go back into these areas and within a month or two, regrow itself and probably add 1,000 or 2,000 recruits and thus continue to control the area. And that's what we see it again and again. And so the IDF has sent in the 162nd Division, which is the one that was in Rafah, to basically go in there. And the question, I guess, is where will Hamas kind of pop up next in full force again?
And this Hamas, is it noticeably fragile and undermanned, or is it the same ambush specialist that we saw during the worst of the fighting in 23?
Well, just judging by the casualties, I guess, on the IDF side, it doesn't seem like they're very capable, because it does seem like the IDF model of kind of rolling in with a tank brigade and sending in, you know, a few thousand infantry or even less, is able to beat them down, and they don't usually inflict a lot of casualties. So that would tend to stand to reason that what is the rabble that the IDF is confronting, you know, either the Hamas guys just run away or they're just not very effective. But I think, you know, we have to remember that Hamas wants to play this game. If you read the Hamas propaganda, they're basically saying, listen, we're still able to fire rockets at Israel like they did today. And they're able to basically control 80% of Gaza by sending in guys that are in plain clothes and still control it somehow. And I think their long-term sense is Israel will get tired of this, and eventually Israel will just leave. And that's what that's what they think happened in the past. From their point of view, they think, okay, well, we'll just wait, and it'll be okay.
Bill, you have a question.
Yes, Seth. Does Israel have a strategy to counter this? Is it planning on securing Gaza, or are we just going to see these, dare I say, mowing the grass for the next several years?
So far, unless the strategy that Israel has, if it has one, is kept very close to the chest of the people in charge, and I assume actually probably there's just clearly a dispute between Israel's defense minister, prime minister, and some members of the prime minister's coalition. So it would seem that the defense minister in Israel has favored replacing Hamas in areas of Gaza and creating a kind of project of bubbles where you create small areas and you try to bring in some other force to run them. Prime minister has generally said that he won't do that because some members of his coalition don't want to see any kind of Palestinian alternative authority there. So this leaves Israel, I think, with just a tactical level of success, which means telling the IDF, keep mowing the grass and keep getting tactical victories, because we can't decide at the political level exactly what we'd like to get to at the end of the day. And that's kind of where this has gone for a year. It's possible that in the second year of the war, you know, someone will pull a rabbit out of the hat and say, listen, this is what we actually want to do. There's been all sorts of rumors that, Israel's thinking about kind of removing or asking a lot of the civilian population in northern Gaza to kind of leave so they could potentially replace the Hamas authority there. But again, one has to see it to believe it when it actually gets rolled out.
We're speaking with Seth Frantzman. He is a Jerusalem Post war correspondent. He is also a Foundation for Defense of Democracy. You can see his reporting at the Long War Journal. He's most importantly the author of the new book, October 7 War, from FTD, which will bring you up to date as to where we are in the first year and how the IDF has performed in Hamas in Gaza. However, now we turn to Hezbollah and what we know so far. As the fog of war remains over Gaza, it's now thicker and thicker over all of Lebanon. Bill Rajo, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, senior fellow, is my colleague and co-host.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.